What's up, everybody? Good morning, good afternoon, wherever you are in the world. My name is Matt, aka Cut Corners, and this is Serato Unscripted. And we got a special episode this week. Very, very special guest. Cookin' Soul is our guest, and we're also doing the Remix Stems competition, which he is going to judge and choose three winners from. So if you don't know already, we have the competition going, and hopefully you've submitted your beats to the Discord. If you're not, you can always follow the Discord. Just type in exclamation Discord in the chat, and it will pull up our Discord. You'll be able to hear all the beats that everyone submitted. You'll be able to get the samples. You'll be able to listen to the samples. And, you know, there's a bunch of heat in there. So definitely check that out. And we have a lot of other cool things on our Discord on a regular, too. We've got Serato's Kitchen. You can ask me questions in there about Unscripted, which is a regular podcast that we do. But without further ado, I want to welcome to the show the legendary, the one and only Cookin' Soul to the program. What up, Cookin' Soul?
Yo, yo, man. What's up?
Hey.
What up? I got my own sound.
Good job, Cookin' Soul.
You know what I'm saying?
I feel it, man.
What's up? It's been a while. It's been a while, man, that I've been on Twitch.
That's right.
You know what I'm saying? I did like 4 months in a row, and then I took a vacation, you know, and I'm back today with you guys. Thank you for having me. I'm saying my Serato family.
Much love.
Nice
man.
To meet you, Matt. By the way, nice to meet you, my
nice
man.
Nice to meet you too, Cookin' Soul, man. Yeah, look, I've been following you for a long time. I think one of the first things I got of yours was a Big Al remix back in the day over the Staple Singers. Do you remember that one?
Oh yeah, yeah. You know what I'm saying? Those are the good old days, man. You know?
Yeah.
We used to do everything for free.
That's right.
For the love of the game. You know?
Absolutely. Yeah, shut up.
Majority of my career, like the first 10 years or something, it was all like free. No, People didn't even want shit for free back in the day, you know?
You didn't.
Had to like, yo, this is for free. Like, I don't even want it. And like, all right. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, it was a hustle.
Everybody was giving out things for free, so it was difficult back then, you know?
Absolutely. Drake made his first record, So Far Gone. That was free, right?
Yeah, it was the free mixtape era. Everything was free. There was no Spotify. There was none of that stuff. Like, you know, the industry didn't figure it out yet, so.
So that's kind of the era, though. That's the MySpace era that you kind of started in, right? We said that we were going to talk about this MySpace era. Can you talk about like your approach for giving things out for free at that time?
Yeah, well, when I first started making music, I wasn't thinking about money or none of that stuff. You know, I was just in love with the game, pretty much. Like in love with making music and, you know, everything that had to do with hip hop. And, you know, I was also in love with basketball. I still am. You know, but those were my two things, you know, so that was my thing. Like, when I started, I remember that I just wanted to get to the point where people would know Cookin' Soul, like, would know my name. I wasn't even Cookin' Soul back then. I was just Big Size when I started. But my focus when I was making music is that at some point people will like my music and I will have, like, respect from people, you know, like, recognition and love and respect. I wasn't thinking about money or none of that. But I remember when I started, because I listened, most of the stuff that I was listening to growing up was like hip hop from the US, from the USA. So like Redman, Wu-Tang, you know, all that stuff. So I remember that even though the Spanish hip hop scene has always been, now it's huge, you know, but, and it was always kind of like good. I mean, not in the 90s, it was more difficult, but starting in the 2000s, the Spanish hip-hop was already making, you could make money with it. Not like now, but now it's like huge, but because hip-hop is like pop music, so it became like the number one music in the world. So now we make more money than ever, of course, but, you know, I wasn't like into Spanish hip-hop that much, so I was into more like American, so that's how the remix came out. You know, you were talking about the remixes, so that's how I started making remixes, because that was the only way for me, being from Valencia, Spain, in 2003 when I started, that was the only way I could hear American rappers on my beats, you know, if I would just drop an acapella straight from the vinyl B side, whatever, on the beat, you know.
Shit, it's still that way for a lot of us to get an American rapper on our shit.
Oh, you can always pay for a feature, but
that's true.
You know, if you get it on the low, whatever. I don't know. Nah, but yeah, for me it was like, you know, yeah, definitely the only way back then, for sure. You know.
And but then
you.
I was just going to say, like, using the acapellas, though, that must have also helped you, like, structure your tracks or learn about arrangement for hip-hop songs as well, right?
Yeah, to me, I mean, I started making beats on a tracker. You know what a tracker is? That thing that goes, like, up and down. It's like the super old DAW, if you want to call it, whatever. It was like numbers that go up and down, and you have like different pages and you have to fill up. Yeah, it was weird, but the page will go down and then it will read whatever you kind of like wrote into it.
Wow.
And that was like what a tracker was on a super cheap PC, like the oldest piece of shit PC you could find. That's how I started making beats, you know? Actually, I started first on like video games and stuff like that, where there were some video games where you could make like music and stuff, like basic stuff with loops, and also on a PC you have these cheap video game style beat making programs. And then I was like, I kind of like it, so then I got into the Fast Tracker because somebody else was also using it and told me you should get into this. It was popular in Spain for some producers in this scene to use this stuff. So that's how I got a hold of that, through my older brother as well. I said, because he was a DJ and that was the equipment that I was using when I started. It was his equipment. So shout out to my older brother. Shout out to Rodrigo, DJ Impe. So yeah, that's also how I started with the remixes, because I had the vinyls and I heard that at some point after making beats, I was like, okay, I'm making beats, but I don't know like how to get them to MCs or nothing. So I was like, why don't I just drop the acapella and see if I can match as I drop the beat, I can drop the acapella in a different room, because it was in a different room, the equipment. So I was just doing it like, okay, let me drop the acapella in this room, go back to the room next door, which was my room, super small room next to my brother's room, and I would just play the beat and try to like match it or something. So that's how I started, you know.
Wow. Yeah, shout out to the brother, Rodrigo, you said?
Yeah, Rodrigo, DJ Impe.
Wow.
So yeah, that's how I went.
That's fire, man. And you've used a lot of different equipment over the years, and you still do, right? For different textures and different techniques. Like, I know I've seen a lot of your videos on your YouTube channel, which, by the way, if anyone who's watching wants to follow, just type in !follow and you'll be able to pull up Cook and Soul's YouTube. It's fantastic. But yeah, you do like lots of cool things with SP1200s, MPC3000s, SP404s. You've got a lot of different kind of gear that gives you specific characteristics, would you say? Or how they kind of make you approach making beats a certain way?
I mean, I just do it for fun, to be honest. I mean, I've been making music for 18 years or like, no, 20 years already.
Wow.
Jeez. Damn, I'm old. I'm like 85 years old. So, yeah, I'm like, I did everything. Like I said, I started on the tracker. Then I went to Acid Pro 4, I believe it was. Pro 4, just like the first 3-4 mixtapes, Cooking Soul mixtapes, was all done on Acid Pro 4.
Wow.
You know, then I have used everything that came out, like any DAW, whatever that I got my hands on, I tried it. And then, you know, you start getting a little bit of money, so you start buying, you know, MPC, whatever. First the MIDI ones, then you go to the real ones, you know, start the vinyl collection, start all that stuff. You know, it's a process, but to me it's more like fun. I am kind of a collector of like all the legendary equipment that was used for all the hip hop classics. Like, of course, I used to watch Pete Rock on the Main Ingredient artwork. In the back, you will see the SP1200, and I would be like, "What is that huge thing there?" And then you start, you know, I have the SP1200 because of that, of Pete Rock, and then I will realize, okay, that his beats do sound kind of this. They have this sound that not all the beats have. Is this kind of sound? It must come from the machine that he's using, you know. So then you start. You know, I'm from Valencia, Spain, like I said, so the information was very, very limited. You know, I'm an outsider in this hip hop world, because I look at it like I look at the United States and I'd be like, okay, these guys are in the culture. They were like born there and they're part of the culture. So I'm an outsider looking in and trying to get as much information as I could through the years of still learning to today, you know. But yeah, it was those things. This is what make people buy those type of machines, I guess. They see my videos now and they want to buy those things because I'm using it, you know. So it's kind of the same thing. I remember when I dropped the SP1200 video, like a week later, the SP1200 doubled in price.
Wow.
You know, so it was like, did I do that? Because my SP1200 video has like 1 million views. It's the highest count of views on that machine. So I must have done something with that, because it happened like right after. So, but it comes with that kind of a thing. Like, to me, like I said, I got the SP1200 because of P-Rock. I got the MPC 3000 because of Jay Dilla.
Yeah.
I got the ASR10 because Kanye and Alchemist, and you know, Timbaland, I just got the ASR10 because it's Timbaland, you know, all that legendary stuff, you know. So I think, you know, you see the piece of gear, you just, I mean, they also look cool as shit, you know. Like, it's super inspirational. Like the Serato video that I did, everybody's like, how is he using the MPC 2000 XL with the Serato Studio? What is that? What is that? Now people is focusing on the fact that I'm using the MPC 2000 XL with Serato, and they're like, already so many comments and questions also in my DMs. Like, how did you do that? How did you do that? So I'm going to have to do a video on that, but it's just MIDI. It's not a secret or anything. But people don't realize that this old, you can combine the two. You can combine the old school with the new school, you know?
I got to say thank you, Cook and Soul, for doing that, because I have an MPC 2000 XL and it hasn't been getting much love lately. So I'm going to pull it out and use it as a MIDI controller. So thank you, Cook and Soul.
Yo, what up? I mean, to me, these machines, like I said, they are inspiration. You know, it's like when I make music, I have to be inspired. Like, that's also why I have like movies playing in the background with no sound, or like video games playing in the background with no sound. Things that inspire me. I'm like a very visual person as well. So that's why I have all these action figures and all this stuff from, like, you know, for nostalgia, because I don't know, that just inspires me, you know. It's like if out here in this studio, I don't have windows.
Oh, wow.
It's a basement, so I don't know if it's raining, I don't know if it's snowing, I don't know. So I don't have, like, some people might be like, I make my hardest beats when it's raining or when it's snowing. I don't know what's going on out there. So I'm inspired by all my surroundings, you know. It's like the vinyl record covers and all that, everything inspires you, you know. Sometimes you just buy a record because of the artwork, you don't even listen to it, you know, and then you just take a guess, and you know, 4 out of 5 is going to be dope if it's a good artwork, you know? So, I don't know.
Now, speaking of flipping samples, I don't want to get too much into the legalities of that, but I do want to ask you about your approach. I think one of the things I've always really enjoyed about your stuff is your production specifically, is how you will take samples that may have been used before and then recontextualizing them. There's one video on your YouTube channel where you're flipping the sample that Ninth Wonder used for Destiny's Child, and then you're making your own yeah. version of it. And that's really insightful and really inspirational for people, because I think a lot of people are like, oh, you know, that somebody else used that sample, maybe I can't use it. But you will really show that you can flip things in a variety of ways. What's your take on that?
Yeah, well, that happened organically because I was doing a live on Twitch, and that sample came in, just came out on my MPC, and I just loaded it in, and I was like, oh, this is what Ninth Wonder used. Let me just completely flip it in a completely, I mean, I don't think Ninth will even listen that sample in the flip that I did. You cannot recognize it. So yeah, I like to do that, you know, because like I said, I understand in the 90s, a lot of people were like, you can't, that's calling like, they would call it biting, you know, if you will just take somebody else's loop or somebody else, that's biting. You cannot do that, you know, you have to. But if you, even Lord Finesse, I think it was Lord Finesse in the interview that said, if you use somebody else sample, something that somebody else already did, you have to make it completely different, and then they will respect it, you know, because this is a completely different outcome. And they will actually say, yo, I know this, but the way he flipped it, though, that's crazy. So they will look at you like, yo, that's wild, you know, what he did. So that's a way of looking at it. That stuck with me, too, you know. And, yeah, I just like to, if it sounds good and it makes me want to use it, I'm going to use it. I don't really, and especially now, there's so much music going out. I cannot keep up. I don't know what was used and what wasn't used, unless it's like one of those classic records that everybody knows. If you might just pull up something you think is rare and somebody already used it totally. Last month, but you don't know about it. So you don't have to have those things in your mind like, oh, I'm not going to flip this because so-and-so did this. Why don't you just look at it into, what can I do with this, you know? Can I do something different with it? Can I challenge myself to make something dope? Especially, I mean, the song is like, if you're going to take a sample, the song is probably at least 3, 4, 5 minutes, you know? Even some songs are like 10 to 13 minutes. These are different eras. Now every song is 2 minutes now, you know? But
true.
People used to do songs and they would just be like 18 minutes playing, you know, it would be like a whole side of the record and there's like two records on it because they're super long songs. So I know within that record you can find different parts to flip, you know? Even if you chop a little bit of the part of the main loop that you said it was known or something, you can throw something from another part, put it in there, and just it will be a completely different outcome, you know?
Yeah. In the chat, I want to shout out Future Beats Show and Filth Spectre. Filth talks about a Dilla story about him trying to reflip a Pete Rock sample for, I think the song you're talking about is Little Brother. He flipped one of the interludes off the Main Ingredient record that you were talking about earlier. It's like a Roy Ayers sample.
Yeah.
And I think about Pete Rock too. And I was a big fan of Pete's instrumentals. I don't know if you were off that BBE series.
Yeah.
And he's like, you know, he's using many Ripperton samples and James Brown samples. A lot of people have you also used. But to your point, he's really flipping it and making it his own. And it's obviously his character, you know, through that whole thing. And I think that's, I love that, man. I want to say, thank you for making that point.
I'm that. Man of the people.
Now, you talked about one of the things that I love about your YouTube too is how much great content you make and you make available to people on your YouTube. You said you're a visual person. The way you're using, you use the face swap filters, and you're creating a lot of visual art. One of the projects you did recently in the last couple of years, I saw had a lot of different like mixtape style, where you're using a lot of the tracks you've produced for people like YG and a lot of the U.S. artists you work with, and you're creating all these visuals with them. And I think that's so brilliant. You know, you've really embraced using YouTube and combining that kind of visual, taking control of the the visual aspect of the, of what you're trying to express with your music. What kind of, like, how did you get into that, or were, you know, what were your inspirations, or what was your intention to do that? Because I think that a lot of producers would benefit from kind of, you know, taking that approach too, right?
Yeah, to me, is I'm just doing what I like, to be honest. Like, I'm just like, I would like to do that. I would like to see that. And I'll just, I'll make it for me, you know? I'll do it for me. And then people think it's dope or not, you know? But I'm doing it for me. That's why I use things that I like. You know, if you see my artworks, you see the references of things that I like, things that I grew up with, or it's the same thing for the visuals, you know? I treat my artwork from my albums and my tapes as like a visual as well. That's telling a story of who I am too, you know? It's easy to just make a picture of me and just put a title and be like, yo, call it a day. But I work really close with, like, I have a team of 2-3 designers that I always work with, and I always tell them my vision and what I'm trying to. I kind of like do the artwork myself, and then I just send it, like, you know, I can do like a little drawing or something and be like, this is what I have, and then they will, of course, do it much better than I do, but I will give them the ideas and stuff like that, because I have it in my mind, I just don't know how to. You know, it's like when I'm making the music, when I hear something, I already made the beat in my head, but I still have to make it. So the machines are always going to be slower than my mind, because I'm already ahead. I just have to create it, what I had in my mind. So it's the same thing for the artwork, but I don't have the skill. So I have my team for that. And I, you know, like I said, I just try to express what's inside of my brain and what's inside of my, yeah, like when I'm making a beat, like I said, I'm thinking about a lot of visual things, and they just come to me, and I will be like, this will be dope with this, and, you know, we'll put this visual in there. And sometimes when I'm, also helps with YouTube copyrights and stuff like that. If you make a remix, the audio of the remix, if you pitch it down, up, whatever, you change it enough, YouTube is not going to recognize the audio. But if you just drop the original visuals, it will get caught right away from the copyright. So if you're just going to use the same video as the original video, then just, you can't even upload it. They're not going to let you do that.
Right.
So that's how I started flipping visuals too, you know, like flipping samples. I started flipping visuals the same way, and then I just got a liking to it, you know, and I got good at, I edit all my videos, you know.
Wow.
Everything you see on YouTube, like I said, like, I like it. I'm a very visual person, so I taught myself to edit videos, just like I edit beats and I make beats and all that, and, you know.
That's really helped though, hey? Like, it feels like your YouTube is a really important platform for you, would you say?
Yeah, definitely, because people can see more than if you make dope beats, or if you make songs with certain people, they make their own visuals. But if you want to tell your story, what better than do it yourself, do it your own visuals. And visuals always tell a more detailed story than just music, because I don't rap, so I don't, you know. Maybe I'm going to start rapping now, because everybody's rapping now. All the producers are rapping now and shit.
Nice. So
I have done a little bit of ghostwriting, but
I didn't.
Yeah, but for Spanish, not in English and stuff. But
I mean, you could always get the A.
If I rap, I will probably rap in Spanish though. My English, I don't think my English is that good.
Your English is great, dude. I got to be honest with you. It's very, very good.
No, man. That's not what my wife says. No. Yeah, the visuals for me is a big deal, man. My YouTube is a big deal for me, because Yeah, I'm not on a major label, not even on one of the major independent labels like Stone Throw or none of this stuff. You know, nobody ever reached out to me from any labels. Nobody, no managers, no nothing, ever reached out to like do something with me or sign me or none of that. I think they consider me from outer space. I'm like, because I'm not in the US, so it's like they cannot reach me or something. I don't understand what's going on with that, but never ever they reached out to me. So I'm like my own. You know how MF Doom and Madlib have all these visual things, and you know, with the mask and Quasimodo and all this, the way they present the artworks and the music, like Stone Throw had this whole team putting these ideas together, and that's how all those artists became so big.
Yeah, shout out Jeff Jank. Although, I know he does a lot of that.
Otherwise, they wouldn't be as big, definitely. That's very important. So since I got no help from nobody, I kind of created my own world. I created my own world for me. I just did everything by myself. You know, I was like, I'm going to have my own record label on YouTube, I guess. my own artwork factory and visuals, and, you know, just to tell my story with my music, you know.
It's kind of crazy, though, because, yeah, you are like a full package. Like, if someone did want to, I mean, well, I guess it's more like, why would you, what would a label even offer you at this point? Because you're so self-sufficient, but that's out of necessity, I guess. You've created such a brand of your own that you wouldn't really be able, like, that all they could really do is just give you money, you know, and just let you do your thing, right?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I have 3 kids now, so any help I can get, that will be good, you know, because, it's getting kind of wild to keep up with this rhythm, you know, with 3 kids. I managed to learn and taught myself to be very fast when creating. I learned a lot of different patterns that I could do to speed up my workflow and things like that. And I know what things gonna work better than others, so I try not to do what doesn't work, even if I like it more. But I have more limited time, so I have to go a little bit more for what works best. So, you know, you learn some things. It's all about trying and error, and, you know, just social media and all that stuff is all about, you know, just try and error and learn. I told myself everything.
That's incredible, man. And honestly, it's really inspiring seeing all the things you do. I got to say, on a personal level, it's very inspiring seeing what you do with your remix videos, all the stuff you're doing on social media, the kind of approach that we know that you have songs with big rappers. You know, obviously you work with Larry June, shout out Midnight Organic. And
good job, Cook Yourself.
And obviously other artists.
Shout out Larry. Good job, Larry. Yeah, of course. I've done a lot of things, but like I said, when I started my career, it was more about getting my name out there, like building this brand. That's why I have the Cooking Soul tag. I feel like I was one of the first producers that had the tag heavily.
Heavy.
You know, I was making sure at the beginning, some people were taking off the tag, and I was like, you can't do that. You know what I'm saying? Like, if you will send out some Pro Tools sessions or something, they will just take out the tag. And I was like, you can't take out the tag. You know what I'm saying? Like,
it's important. You can't do that. Especially if you're not there in the session, you know, I think, you know, like you said, if you're in another country or whatever, you know, you don't have as much control. And I've heard stories about, you know, Madlib only providing 2 tracks of his, you know, only like stereo mix.
I mix and master everything that comes out. Any Cooking Soul stuff that came out in the last 10 years at least, I have done everything myself. I haven't sent any stems in like many, many years. I taught myself how to mix and master. I mix and master everything. I don't trust nobody to, because even if they just you know how a beat changes if the snare is a little bit higher than it should, the whole feeling of the beat changes.
Absolutely.
You know, so you will send out stamps and somebody will mix it, and then the beat is just completely different. It has a whole different feeling. You know, it's not even about the tag or anything. It's just about the whole feeling of the beat. You know, everything will change. So I told myself how to have my own sound as well.
I love this. Tangle Lang says in here, the tag is iconic in this house. Sometimes I'll catch my girlfriend just singing out Cook and Soldier herself while she does schoolwork or whatever. It's great.
Shout out to your girlfriend. Good job, girlfriend.
Now, one of the things I have to ask you about, I know you talked a little bit about it earlier, is how much basketball has played a big role in your life. I need to know, is Michael Jordan the greatest of all time, or is there anybody else coming close?
Come on, man. There's no question about that, man. Good. If somebody says something different, they're just tripping, man. Or they were not there, you know?
That's probably
nobody will come close. Nobody will come close because it's just a feeling. When Michael was in the court, you knew that if there's time on the clock, he can still make it happen. He can still win, you know. It was like, just pass it to Mike and let him, you know, do his thing. And we still to this day don't have that. I think you don't fully trust somebody with the ball or to the fan or to all do those things last minute and get the results and stuff, you know. But nah, I'm saying, you know, there's so many great players, you know, and so many. I feel like the league has so much more skill overall. You know, you will have like old players are like really good players now, you know. Maybe in the 90s. I mean, the 90s, the players were incredibly good as well, but maybe not so much. Like, all the teams are like stacked with great players. You know, but I don't like the defense right now in the league. You know, I think it's kind of like, yeah, if you come from the 90s and early 2000s, the defense was more intense. You know, I kind of like that too.
Yeah.
So right now they're prioritizing on the, you know, more points and more dunks and all that stuff, more triples and all that, you know, what 3-point shots, but you know, I still enjoy it, but yeah, there's nothing like the old school NBA for sure, you know.
So in the producer world, who is your Michael Jordan of production?
Oh man, that's a tough one. I don't think it's that clear when on the beats as it is with Michael Jordan.
Good point.
I was obsessed with MJ growing up, like, I don't know, like, yeah, and he helped me have this vision too of like, he motivated me to want it to be great no matter what and just put so much work in. And so I got all the motivation and all that from watching his tapes and, you know, all that stuff. So he's kind of like just in my brain, you know, he made a mark for life. So, but for producers, I think with music overall, things change. Like, you like something, you are in this vibe right now for this month, and then next month you are more into another vibe. So you just dig a little bit more deep and be like, yo, this is what I'm really feeling right now, you know. True. But I got a lot of inspiration from many different producers through the years, you know. I was like a DJ Premier type dude when I started. Like, I just wanted to, I think every producer from my era just copied DJ Premier beats. That's what you do when you start. You start and you be like, I want to be DJ Premier. Like, I want to see what he's doing, you know. Even if you listen to the first beats that Alchemist was doing, you could see he was trying to be like DJ Premier and stuff. Like, we all have our DJ Premier type beats, you know. We all have them.
Absolutely.
So that was my first producer, still to this day one of my favorites. Of course, Pete Rock as well, you know. Pete Rock I think Premier and Pete Rock on that, around that era was like things that I was listening to the most. Then I got a shout out. Eric Sermon was also very important for me.
Yes.
I think he's very underrated when you talk about producers, the people and the names that people always drop. I don't hear Eric Sermon enough, and he has done so many things and in so many different eras, you know, and he always changed his sound, adapted his sound from samples to no samples. He used to do multiple layers as well of different samples, and it's just one of the greatest ever, you know, one of the funkiest bass lines and all that stuff, you know, the greedy drums, the layering different samples, just taking a little atmosphere, dropping 3-4 bass notes, and then it was a banger, you know, like crazy.
Yeah, that Muddy Waters record, I remember listening to and just bugging on the beats, like so many great Eric Sermon beats on that Redman record.
Yeah, it's crazy. All the Redman stuff, the Keith Murray, the Insomnia album is one of my favorites. It's kind of like the, you know, DJ Premier has the Group Home album.
Of course, yeah.
Pete Rock has the I&I album, the Center of Attention. And then Eric Sermon has the Insomnia album, which is kind of like a group of different people that he was trying to sign and all that. And he did also this album. And he has like some crazy beats on there too.
Wow.
So, yeah, I mean, those three, and of course, you know, a lot of Dilla, of course, you know. And yeah, I mean, it just changes, you know.
Yeah.
There's so many people that anything that, even if it drops yesterday and I hear it and I'll be like, yo, that shit is dope, I get inspired from it, you know, and then I can go create something. I think that's why people watch my YouTube channel as well, because they look for inspiration, you know.
Yeah, one of the great things I enjoyed really a lot about one of your Twitch streams I was watching a little while ago when you were doing it pretty regularly was you'd also play a lot of like samples, and you'd talk about you know, like on you'd just go digging for like city pop, and you'd be talking about, you know, the different players on the records. Like, you know, you've obviously got a very deep knowledge of how, you know, those records were made and the people that played on them, and how to find, you know, oh, if Ron Carter played bass on this one and he's going to be playing on this record, you know, it's going to have like great bass. Or if Ahmad Jamal played on this record, or, you know, if Herbie's on this, then you, or Ramsey Lewis or whatever, you can figure out, or, you know, the record labels, all that kind of stuff. And I thought that was actually something that I found also really inspirational about your Twitch streams, is just kind of like sharing that knowledge and sharing that process of how to find samples. Because I think a lot of us, you know, we'll go to like a YouTube, you know, playlist or whatever, but they won't be the same context. You know, and I'm also a little older, so I remember pre-YouTube digging for records, there was certain ways to find things, you know, and I just wanted to mention that, you know, it was one of the really cool things about how you kind of understand that deep level of digging and understanding music and how music and hip-hop beats were kind of made from that era too, which is really, really quite fascinating, you know?
Yeah, I think I picked that up from, you know, when we started getting music on the vinyl and the CDs, you could read the credits. So you would see like, okay, so DJ Premier made this beat, so I know it's going to be a banger for sure. So you will just get that vinyl of the production, and then you would say, okay, Eddie Sancho mixed by Eddie Sancho, and you know, at D&D Studios, you will get all the information. So back in my day, I'm only 37. I'm about to be 38 next week, but it's like 85 years old in actual time, but because things move so fast. So you just, you know, I had this brain where I could just remember everything. Every song I would be like, okay, that was produced by this guy in this studio, mixed by this guy. I would just get all this information. Now I don't remember none of that stuff. I had to delete all this information to get new information in. But it's like a hard drive, you know?
Yeah.
But that's how I started looking at records that I was sampling. And I'll be like, okay, this is produced by this or that. And then, you know, this bass player and this people on the keys and this and that. And then you just started looking for those names because you know that that's going to be some fire, you know? So you just make your own list and then you just go on like that, you know? And now it's easier with places like Discogs and all that stuff.
Yeah.
You can just start, put an artist and then you just go from there. Check out the discography, you know? He played here, he played there. Yeah, so.
Yeah, one of the things that's is really...
Wrong with YouTube, though.
No, nothing wrong with YouTube. Big
nothing wrong with sampling for YouTube. There's nothing wrong with that. There's no shame in that. There's no shame in sampling anything. I'm a big, how do you say that? What everybody is, some people is against it. You're not against it. You are with it. Yeah. I don't know how, defender, I guess. No, yeah. I don't know how to say
I
that.
I think that's a good way of a defender of sampling from YouTube.
No, defender of sampling from anything.
Anything, true.
It doesn't matter. As long as it goes into your DAW or into your MPC and then you do your thing with it, doesn't matter where it came from. Could be a cassette advocate. Yeah, that's what I was looking for. So it could be a cassette, it could be VHS, could be a video game, a video console, could be anything, you know?
Yeah.
As long as you have that, you know, the dirtier, the better for me. You know, the more layers of things that go through it, the better, because it just has more personality to it. But nothing wrong with sampling from a clean CD. Also, you know, you can make it dirtier later too. So,
hey, I wanted to let everyone know though, like, one of the things I really enjoy, and this is, I'm not sponsored by Tidal or anything, but I really like Untidal. You can see the credits. So, if you are into that kind of workflow or learning about like who's involved in songs and who mixed and mastered them, Tidal is really good for that. You can pull up an album, you can see not only the producer or the instrumentals, people that played on the, you know, different instruments on the record, you can also find out who mixed it. And shout out people like Decap, who, you know, he like, I noticed he was mixing and mastering for the latest Larry Jern records and things like that. And then you're like, oh shit, he also makes beats, he does drums at Knock and things like that, and you're like, whoa, there's a whole nother world of, you know, this music industry that, you know, sometimes gets a little forgotten about it, you know?
Yeah, people, that's why this is the key of why I have YouTube and why I have my tag on Old Beats and why I have that, because you have to be in people's faces if you want to be recognized. You know, if you just play the background, you can only get to a certain point. Mm. You know, if you want to like move a certain way or get some certain looks or whatever, you know, if you want to like, yeah, like I said, it's easier if you're in the forefront, and being a producer has never been like being in the forefront.
No.
Until recent years or whatever, you know.
And even still now, but, it maybe isn't. Yeah. It depends on who you are too, right? There's like, when you think about
exactly.
It.
Yeah. Exactly. You can still be very much unknown if you don't bury in your face with it, you know.
Now,
but if you want to create a brand that's like, you know, legendary, whatever, or stays in time, you have to like present it in that way, I guess.
Absolutely. Hey, now, speaking of which, that kind of relationship of producer and DJ, I think it's, producer and artist is quite a unique one. And I think you have a really, you play a really interesting role, because you put out obviously a lot of your own music and remixes and things like that, but you also do work with artists. You know, some of my favorite artists you've produced for. And it's really, I'm really curious to know how you cultivated those relationships, or how you, I think a lot of producers, that's like a real barrier to them kind of progressing as producers. And I think a lot of people would love to know how you kind of basically got your beats in front of those people. Or is there anything that specifically worked well for you that you'd want to share, or, you know, anything like that?
Yeah, well, keep in mind, like I said, that I'm from Valencia, Spain. So when I started making beats, and when I did my first mixtape, the only way we had to reach out people was like through the internet, of course. So you would just go on a certain page of like a discussion page, and you would just be like, yo, listen to my stuff, trying to spam, or, you know, And then you will eventually get some people that fuck with it or whatever. But then, you know, MySpace came on and it was more like, okay, you know, let's see how this is going to help. That was like, I guess, the first social media thing, you know. So I just used that, you know, to the most extent possible that I could, to the highest degree that I could, try to have as much people listening to my stuff, you know. And I would just started doing the remixes. I would already be doing the videos for MySpace, you know.
Wow.
I would just put the video and be like MySpace/CookingSoul at the end, whatever, you know, in big letters, or the website, stuff like that. And it eventually, I mean, it did work because we got it up to 1 million fans on MySpace.
Wow.
You know, so it was kind of like a big page, and that we used to contact every artist, every A&R, every manager that had a thing to do with hip hop. I would just send them a message. I would literally send like 100 messages every day or something. Wow. I would just go through different profiles and start sending messages like, yo, this is Cooking Soul, you know, make beats, whatever, whatever. If you give us an email, we'll send you some beats, you know, whatever, whatever. So any email I got back, I'll just put it on a list, and every week, all the beats that I made through the week, I'll just drop them all on the email. Yeah, what happened?
We lost your...
Am I still on?
Yeah, you're still there, but we lost your picture.
Oh, shit. Hold up. Just a second. Thing is the camera.
That is great advice, though. Phil Spector. I like the fact that you're talking about kind of being proactive with it. And I think a lot of us maybe get a little uncomfortable. You're back. Yeah, you got you back.
Yeah, is my sound on? Everything is good?
Yep, 100%.
Yeah, I think it's the camera that just needs to cool off or something. It's the Sony A7 IV, whatever. I think when it gets hot, it's just dead. So, like I was saying, I will just make a list of DJs, A&Rs, artists, whatever. And every week I would just email everybody. Every beat. You know, my tag was on the beat. Just one tag, not like multiple tags. If you just tag the beat all over the place, nobody's going to listen to that. So one tag is enough. So that's how I did it, pretty much, you know. And at some point, people was expecting them beats to come in, you know.
Right.
And then once the track started popping out, then you would just, you know, you make a name for yourself, you know, with the mixtapes, and everything helps, you know.
Yeah, I like that you're talking about, yeah, you got to kind of still put your stuff out as well as also, you can't just kind of do one or the other. It's kind of, they both, it sounds to me like both kind of help each other. You know, if you're going to be doing your own remixes, then people will be like, oh, he's already doing stuff. And then that will also lead to potential placements or potential collaborations with artists, right?
I don't know if it's necessarily linked, but if for building a brand for myself, it was important to do all kinds of things and to get, you know, because you can be like a producer for artists or a producer that only does like tapes, or you can be both, and you can also do drum kits, you can do vinyls, merch, whatever. It's all about how you want to do it. You know, some people don't want to be on front of the camera. Some people don't want to create content. They just want to make beats, you know. Everybody wants to make beats, you know.
Yeah.
Everybody wants to make beats. It's so cool to make beats, right?
It is. Like
you can just make beats all day. And that's the best part of it. But then 90% of the job is the other stuff.
Yeah, that's, you know, true. Yeah.
So I spent so little time making beats, and I spend so much of the time doing all the other things that I ain't supposed to be doing, you know?
Yeah.
So that is the reality of it, you know? And people just don't seem to understand how much work is behind. You know, if you make beats, I have thousands of beats that never came out. I'm actually trying to go back to work with artists again. I'm trying to pick that up. So I'm going through beats and stuff like that, and I'm like, damn, I have so many beats that never came out, because doing beats is easy. That's the easiest part to me. Is the all the other stuff that's around, you know, if you want to be if you want to build a brand and you want to be known and you want to be respected and all that, there's so much more that comes with it. And for me, for instance, something that I have never done in my career and that I lack of is the connections, like in person. You know, the only rapper that I ever met that I work with is Nipsey Hussle.
Oh, wow.
I never met anybody else.
Rest in peace, Nipsey.
Nobody else. Yeah, rest in peace, man. Super cool dude. But we used to talk a lot on the Gmail chat and stuff like that, you know. It was cool. But that's the only rapper that I met.
Wow.
You know, while we was working. I met a few other guys just on a random... You know, since I moved to Amsterdam, some guys came in, do shows, so I met them backstage or whatnot. But I'm not from the United States, so I don't have those friendships and connections that, for instance, like Alchemist has, you know? That he's always in the studio with these guys, but he's also friends with these guys, you know? So all these other guys are in the studio, they with each other all day. So, of course, more projects are going to come out that way, you know? And that's something that I never had. So some people might look at my discography, might not put me on their favorite producer list or whatever, because I don't have those projects like Piñata, Madlib has with Gifts, or like all these classic projects, because those type of projects, you have to be in the room and you have to create those types of things, you know? Yeah, I've done a lot of things, but I haven't had those experiences where I could just be, yeah, like creating those connections and being in the studio with all these people and all that stuff, you know?
So working with artists, is there any artists in particular that you'd really love to work with that are out now? Like who, if you could just have like a, make an album of just your favorite artists, who would be on it?
Man, that's a difficult question, because I'm not really hip into like, what's new, like I think it's just so much music coming out, and I have three kids and I have to still do so much content and beat making and all this stuff that I have to do, that I don't have the actual time to be like updated all the time to what's new, you know. However, I was the first producer who worked with Larry June.
Hey, good job, Larry.
That's what I'm saying. Well, nobody was fucking with Larry June. You know, well, actually, I'm lying, because Sledren put me on to Larry June. He was working with Larry June, and I was working with Sledren and still do. That's my brother. But he was working with Larry June. But, you know, me and Sledren were the first producers to, like, really fuck with Larry June. And when I made his project, I was like, this dude is going to be a star. And this was 2016. And I remember sending emails to everybody and telling you, like, Larry June is the future. Nobody was fucking with Larry June. I got all kinds of emails back, like, this ain't it, blah, blah, blah. This is...
Wow.
People took mad long to get hip into Larry June. And that's a fact. So, yeah. Me and Sledren were like one of the first to really fuck with Larry June, because I just saw his style was so unique, and the things that he was saying, it was just completely different. And he had the yee-hee and the good job and all that stuff, and I was like, man, this dude is really, he's speaking to me, because I'm big into like Will Ferrell, all this type of humor like that. I'm just like stupid humor. And And also like the playalistic player talk and all that, you know, I'm really into that kind of thing, you know. And he wasn't talking about like violence and guns and all that stuff, which doesn't really represent me or anything, you know. But Larry June, really somebody that I got hip into it right away. So it just took mad long for him to get recognized. I think it was 2019 when people started paying more attention, you know. But yeah. Shout out to Larry June, man. Definitely yeah. One of my favorites. One of my favorite rappers for sure.
Absolutely. Shout and out Larry yeah.
June. I don't know if I have to.
Good job, Cooker Soul.
Yeah, so I don't know, man. Rappers that I would like to work with, I don't know, man. I don't know. From the new era, I think there's also just a lot of people doing dope music too, you know. Also a lot of producers doing dope stuff, you know. So it's hard to just name one, you know. But I'm also not like the most hip, like I said, you know.
Well, we love the fact that you keep on doing the remixes of Freddie, Alchemist, and, you know, Larry, and all the other people that you're flipping their freestyles. It's super dope, man. Yeah. I love all that stuff. Now, before we get into the beat competition, I have one more question for you. And I always love the attention to detail. You always got a fresh outfit on. You always got the fresh polo. So I see the snow beach in the collection. You got a nice selection of sneakers. Yeah. What's your favorite sneaker?
My favorite sneaker is probably the Jordan 3.
The 3?
The white. Yeah.
The one
probably.
That just came
out? I'm not hip of what just came out, but the Jordan 3, the white with the elephant print, you know, the classic, that will probably be my favorite. But yeah, I like a lot of Jordans though. I have a lot of Jordans of every model, you know, so yeah, a lot of classic colorways, you know. I think Jordan might be definitely my favorite sneaker, but it's not the most comfortable sneaker though, so I don't be wearing much. Also, my feet are wider now, so a lot of my joints don't fit. A lot of my shoes don't fit, so they're just collecting dust.
Yo, I had the same problem, bro. I had to size up.
I'm like wearing Crocs right now, man. Shout out to Crocs, Air Crocs. Oh, give me a sponsor, Crocs. Yeah. Good job, Crocs.
Good job, Cooking
Soul. Absolutely, yeah. Get Croc sponsor for Cooking Soul ASAP.
Thing as you get older, you just want to be comfortable. You know.